Cincinnati.
Hello and welcome to episode 244 of Cincinnati, the Bengals UK podcast. My name is Paul Hirons. Welcome, welcome one and all. And we're entering a crucial part of the off-season, I would say. A very crucial part of the off-season. We've just finished with the NFL Scouting Combine, where we watched an astonishingly large men run astonishingly quickly in astonishingly skimpy clothing. And we also have free agency coming up next week. So there's a lot to talk about. And talking about it with me is Nathan Palmer. Nathan, hello.
Good evening, my son. How are you? Yeah, I completely agree. It's a fascinating time of the offseason now, delicately poised in that period. Free agency, you know, not even on the horizon anymore, is it? It's basically just a week away before some dirty dealings on the side occur, before the official start. And then, obviously, from then on, and even already, it feels like draft season is well and truly underway with, you know, the variety of analysts, measurements, RAS scores, all of these things floating around. So
I do everyone like this time of year. I have to say it's exciting, I think, because the prospect of new players on your team, it's really fun, I think. Of course, one of the big questions have been answered since the last time we spoke to you. T. Higgins has the Bengals have slapped the franchise tag on our star number 5 wide receiver T. Higgins. So he will be around for a fifth year next year, which is, you know, I think everyone expected that, didn't they, Nathan?
Will he be around?
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, this is, I think he will. The Bengals, you know, during the combine, we saw videos of Duke chatting away, Zach chatting away, who else? Lou Anarumo, our new offensive coordinator, Dan Pichere. All those guys were chatting. You know, Frank Pollack was there. All kinds of people. Darren Simmons as well. So it's a good opportunity to catch up with the coaches. And they were kind of being quite tight-lipped and quite, you know, ambiguous and ambivalent about things. They weren't sort of committing to kind of hard and fast answers, as they shouldn't really at the combine. Everyone's listening in, they've got their strategies, they don't want to reveal their hand too much about where they're going to go in free agency or the draft. They're there to kind of perhaps tease stuff, but yeah, I think the consensus is that, you know, they did sign T for him to play next year, really. And I must say, we have a special guest this week. It's coming up a bit later in the show. We've got an actual bona fide NFL agent. His name is Jesse James. That's right, he really is Jesse James, and he's brilliant. So hang on for that, because we're going to talk about the contract situation and the tag, and in fact where the Bengals are contractually and in free agency, all the rest of it, and some chat about what it is to be an agent. So it's really interesting, so do stay tuned for that. It's interesting, isn't it, Nathan? Because the Bengals normally wait, if they're going to tag anyone, they normally wait until the absolute last minute, the deadline, to tag someone. And instead, it was the opposite this year. Pretty much the day after, or maybe the same day or the day after, whatever, the franchise tag season or window opened, the Bengals quickly acted. I think that was, you know, Jesse will talk about that a bit later, but I found that really interesting. And I wonder if it was because they wanted to send a message to any... Well, it could work both ways, really, couldn't it? They could kind of say, look, no, he's our player for the year. Get off. Leave him alone. Or they were. They did want to tag him in time for the combine, so they could maybe entertain some trade chattings deep, you know, in some sort of dive bar in Indianapolis with other executives. I can imagine you doing that, Nathan, I must say.
I was there actually, standing in Indianapolis. I've just gone back.
I can so imagine you as an agent, man. I think you'd be fantastic. But anyway, so yeah, it got done early, didn't it? Which I think, did it surprise you, that move?
Not tagging him. I don't think anyone seriously felt like there was a long-term deal going to be struck. Timing-wise, yeah, I think so. And I mean, it's a smart move, really, isn't it? Because what's the benefit if they're not close on a long-term deal and they potentially don't think it's the right move for a long-term deal to sort of tie up all that money in T, and then you've got to tie up all that money in Jamar Chase, who everyone wants to see back, and obviously you've got the money tied up in Joe Boy. That's an enormous amount of cap tied up in those three players. So I don't think anyone really thought that long-term deal was there. I'm not sure, you know, what the Bengals were willing to pay T. Higgins would have been very close at all. So with that in mind, you're not going to get a long-term deal done. You don't need the additional time. It's a smart move, isn't it? You know, tag him early, give yourself a bit of time to speak to people, see what people are offering. And I think the narrative around the league has been very much the Bengals would be open to trading him. And why wouldn't they? You know, if you had a team that, you know, really felt that he would be their number one receiver and that he'd solve a lot of problems for them, and they were willing to quote overpay or just meet the Bengals valuation, which was naturally, I think, with the Bengals, they're hard bargainers. They're not going to want to give him away, you know, for a late second, a mid second. They're going to probably want a high second minimum, if not a high second and a fifth, or, you know, a late first round pick, something like that, to sweeten the deal for him. Now, you know, I think they'll be happy with either outcome as well. If T's here next season, everyone's happy, aren't they? Everyone's happy he's been franchised. You've got two fantastic receivers on the team for Joe Boy. You move forward. If you get a deal that really sort of, you know, wets your whistle and get, you know, late first rounder, so you can sort of double stack in the draft, that's very exciting. I'm not sure necessarily, though, as I've sort of gone back and forth with the whole thing. I mean, it'd be great to get a late first round pick, or what, you know, a second and you know, a third or fourth on top of that or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily help you win now, does it? And that's the thing that I think, obviously, the Bengals would have to sort of figure out. Not only would they have to, you know, take these new guys on board in the draft, but you'd have to then be a bit more aggressive in free agency to try and fill that gap, because we are built to win now. We need to, you know, do what we can before Joe Boy's contract goes massively up. But overall, I think it was a sensible move, wasn't it, to get that done?
Yes, I think so. If you listen to Paul Dana Jr.'s new podcast, The Growler, The Growler, of course, has a different meaning in the UK to what it does in the US, so, but we'll leave that there for now. He was saying there wasn't actually too much chat, tradey chat with T. Higgins at the Combine, so that was kind of quite interesting. And, of course, the other big news which impacts this whole scenario is that the salary cap went up from $224.8 million to $255.4 million, which is obviously a bigger jump than I think a lot. It's the largest, apparently, in free agency history. And everyone's kind of rubbing their hands saying, hey, we can spend more on more players, you know, which is kind of true. But you would expect, conversely, agents to be kind of rubbing their hands a little bit and thinking they can get more for their clients as well. So, you know, not only does the spending potentially go up, but it means that players' wages will go up. It'd be interesting to see what Justin Jefferson gets this off-season.
Is that why Jesse James is on our podcast? Is he getting his name out there, trying to get a few clients?
I mean, who knows? I did ask him for a cut of anything that he earns later on. So this, watch this space. I might be broadcasting from a new home in the Bahamas at some point very soon. But but yeah, it's really interesting. The other interesting thing, I think, is a report that the Enquirer's Kelsey Conway put out there that was backed up by a lot of the Bengals beat writers that the Bengals are looking for a safety and a defensive tackle in free agency. There was mention that they're looking at cornerbacks in for the first round in the draft as a potential first round option. Cornerbacks were, you know, they've not been mentioned actually, but it sort of makes sense if they're a bit iffy on DJ Turner, and Cheeto's going, then, you know, they're not shy of drafting first round corners. In fact, they kind of quite like corners in the first round, but they've hit in the second round recently. So, you know, it just depends how the draft kind of plays out, really. And, you know, I've started my annual spreadsheet to see who the Bengals have been meeting at various combines and senior bowls. And we've got the more formal meetings and pro days coming up as well. But, you know, they've been doing their due diligence. They've been meeting a lot, actually, of defensive ends at the combine. They met some defensive tackles. They met some tight ends. A lot of people are hankering after Brock Bowers. They met some offensive tackles, which they could go down that route. So it's all bubbling away, isn't it? I mean, what did you think when you saw cornerback? Because it was a position that's not really been mentioned. It's been mostly at the moment, I'd say, defensive tackle and an offensive line with Brock Bowers thrown in there, you know. But yeah, cornerback sort of stunned everybody, I think. And I saw an article that Jeff Hobson wrote a good week or so before the Kelsey Conway article. It wasn't the Kelsey Conway article. I do beg your pardon. It was some stuff that the coach had said in the combine, and Jeff mentioned cornerback in one of his articles. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, and no one really picked up on it. But always rely on Uncle Jeff to be first on team matters. So yeah, it's all bubbling away. It's some interesting nuggets there, I think.
Yeah, it definitely surprised me, the cornerback chat. Like you said, the Bengals had a really long and deep history of drafting them. And to be fair to the Bengals, they've done a pretty good job at drafting them as well. You have to say that. There's been some very good players that they've got some good production out of over the years. Maybe not elite production. Like, you look back at people like Leon Hall was very good. Dre Kirkpatrick was solid. William Jackson was pretty good as well. And, you know, maybe, like I said, nothing that's going to sort of, you know, fly off the handle, but some good solid players. And you've obviously got now some good young players on the team that they've drafted again. So Cam Taylor-Britt. I was interested in what you were saying about, you know, DJ Turner. And potentially the confidence there. But I thought he had a pretty solid year, DJ Turner.
He fell off the cliff a little bit towards the end, Nathan. He was getting burned quite regularly. And the chat was that the rookie wall kind of, he didn't hit the rookie wall, but the rookie wall hit him, you know. So it was kind of, I don't think they sold him. And also, you know, while we're talking about defensive backs, you know, what do you do with Nick Scott, Dax Hill? Dax Hill is the big talking point at the moment in that backfield. No one quite knows what to do with him because he is so versatile, and athletically he's fantastic, but mentally he showed his, you know, some communication issues last year. So what do you do with Dax Hill? Do you kind of move him around a bit more and have, I don't know, what do you do? It's interesting.
I just wouldn't have seen it as like a first round priority. You've got obviously Cam Taylor-Britt there. Obviously, you're saying with Cheeto, he's off. I think that's a fair point. I don't know. If there's really good value there, if there's a player there that you can't turn down at the position, you're clearly getting the best player available, then I think there's an argument perhaps for it. But the problem with talking about the draft too much at this time is it just really depends on free agency, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Bengals are going to go out there, they're going to be speaking to free agents, they're going to be looking at what happens on the market. There'll be some players that teams will overpay for and be very aggressive for, and there'll be others that perhaps don't get the money or the length of contract they're looking for, and the Bengals might swoop in and get a good deal there, and therefore that changes your strategy. The one thing that I thought that came out of the combine from sort of reading what people were writing was the fact that they felt the Bengals, all the coaches were in unison. They had a very succinct plan. They knew what they were doing, and they felt in a very good place moving forward in terms of what that plan was. Now, that's always good to hear, you know, they everyone's on the same page and they really felt good around what they were doing moving forward. Now, that, you know, obviously there's quite a few question marks there for the Bengals, but you know, they're sat in a good place in the draft, really right in the middle there. There'll be some good talent that falls to them.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you talk about the draft and, you know, once again, the wide receivers wowed. And it goes back to my point. Every year now, it seems to be a really deep wide receiver class. So would losing someone like T be that bad? I mean, you can discuss that till the cows come home. We all love T, obviously. I'm delighted that he's going to be sticking around. But also, it's supposed to be a very deep offensive tackle class, you know? So I do think they'll draft a tackle, an offensive tackle, and I do think they'll try and beef up the defensive line as well. But, you know, what if there is a run on these offensive tackles and a couple of the edge rushers drop to us, a Jared Verse or someone like that? What if one of the cornerbacks drops to us? What if someone like a Johnny Newton, or formerly known as Jazan Newton, or a Byron Murphy, he's there at 18. He's getting a lot of chitty chatter at the moment. But then, you know, you also read the tea leaves, and they say apparently the Bengals are interested, or should be interested, in the former Jets right tackle McKee Becton, because, again, Pollack used to coach him. He fits a need, but of course he's a risk because he's been injured for a lot of his time in his first 4 years in the NFL. But that, you know, that would make a free agent sense. But like, you're right, all the pieces will start to move pretty soon. And the Bengals normally, I mean, we were just talking off air about whether they, you know, when we should do an episode for free agency, because a week is a long time in free agency, right? Yeah. So do we do, you know, we were chatting about that, and I kind of said, well, it just depends, really, because if you remember a couple of years ago, they went out more, as soon as the gun was fired, they were out of the traps, and they went off and signed Ted Karras and Alex Kappa within hours of free agency opening up, and shocked everyone. Not least us, do you know what I mean? Shocked the league, and it was something that we'd not really seen before. So, and they obviously had those guys targeted. They didn't tamper them, but with them. But they had them targeted. And I wonder if that's the same this year. You know, will they go out to safety? Christian Wilkins at the Dolphins is going to hit free agency now. He's going to command huge bickies, I think. So things will fall into place, you know, eventually. But it's fun to talk about right now, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, as the journalist was saying around the Bengals coaching staff feeling very good about their plan and feeling very confident, maybe that's true. Maybe they have got some, you know, a player or two that they've had a sort of few informal discussions with, and they feel like that a deal can be struck there where they can sort of fill a few positions that allows them then to look at the draft and sort of narrow down and say, okay, right, we've got the tackle position sorted, the defensive tackle position sorted, and, you know, we've got the safety position sorted. Therefore, you know, we can, in the first round, look at the offensive line more so than other positions, because we've got other gaps filled. So you'd like to think so. They've been very methodical in free agency, like you said, the last couple of years, made some very astute signings. So you just got to hope that continues. The one thing I'd say that I really believe, and I wouldn't be against this pick whatsoever in the draft, but the one position I think the Bengals will not target in that first round is tight end. I don't think they would take. I don't think Brock Bowers, even if he was there, I don't think they'd pull the trigger on him. I just don't think the way their offense is set up and the game plan they put together, I'm just not sure they would sit there and say, this is going to be worth a first round pick for us.
But maybe this is the year they invest in a tight end, because, and I say because, Tyler Boyd's off, and that leaves a big hole in that middle of the field. And Brock Bowers isn't a massive guy in terms of tight end. He is more or less the same size as Tyler Boyd. So he could be used in that sort of hybrid slot tight end role, you know. So maybe this is the year. Maybe because Tyler Boyd looks likely to be leaving, that does open the door a little bit to taking a tight end earlier? I don't know.
I just think they'll look for someone like Charlie Jones to bridge that gap that Tyler Boyd left. Mm. I mean, Tyler Boyd, you know, he's been such a fantastic player for us for a very long time. But I think they'll look to either Charlie Jones or Trenton Irwin just to step up.
But you also saw Trenton Irwin last time when he came in. He was good, but in that slot, he just wasn't getting the separation that Tyler Boyd used to get. But, you know.
I don't think Tyler Boyd was anywhere near his best last year, mm-hmm. though. I think there was quite a few drops in there. Just didn't get open as much. It wasn't as much production as you were used to from him. Granted, all right, yeah, Joe Boyd's not there for the whole year to sort of give him a bit more from that sense. But I don't think it would be the gap that you'd think it might be to get someone, you know, like a Charlie Jones or Trenton Irwin to try and fill that, you know, wide receiver three. And I do think they'll draft a wide receiver. I'm not sure when it will be. I very much doubt it will be in round one. But if it's rounds three, four, you know, someone that they'll get a bit of playing time to and hopefully create a very nice bit of competition in training camp for that wide receiver three spot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, isn't it? I think there is the hope that there could be a long-term deal done with T. And again, our guest Jesse James is coming up very, very soon. We'll talk about that. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Two things, talking about wide receivers. John Ross. His 40-yard dash record was smashed at the weekend by Xavier Worthy. Lots of chat about John Ross. Didn't really happen for old John Boy, did it, unfortunately?
No. I mean, he had his flashes, didn't he? It was like his speed. It was sort of there at times, and, you know, he'd make some incredible plays. And he did have one year, I think, where he ended up with, like, 8-9 touchdowns. He was quite a good red zone threat. He wasn't just necessarily one of those guys, a bit like a Gabe Davis, that just streak down the field and, you know, turn up in one game and not another. He actually was quite a good little threat in the red zone. I just think for him it was injuries, and I think mentally as well there was a few questionable things there. I'm not sure him and Marvin were always on the same page, and you know, it's very hard to evaluate a player mentally, isn't it? But for whatever reason, it just wasn't there. But I remember Dre Kirkpatrick on John Ross. I always remember this. Dre Kirkpatrick, I think it was maybe after his rookie year, was basically just, because obviously they'd line up against each other in practice all the time. And he turned around and said, this guy is going to be completely uncoverable this season. You know, you watch, he's going to tear the league in half. And that was the one year I think John Ross did fairly well. He didn't quite put it all together and tear the league in half, but he did have a fairly decent year. But there was just no consistency was there, and he just couldn't quite...
Bearing in mind he's a wide receiver, there was one fatal flaw in John Ross's game, and that is he couldn't catch the ball. So, a shame. Seemed like a really nice guy as well, didn't he? So, we wish him well. Also, DJ Reed is on the rehab front. He's been putting out videos. Again, I'm sure he's just putting the league on notice that he's around and his rehab's going well. Joe Boy's rehab apparently is going well as well. Should be May. Should be ready for the OTAs. That was in an article, according to Ben Baby.
Can I just touch on that super quickly?
You can.
I take this with, you know, a whole bag of salt, not even just a pinch. But there was a Twitter doctor out there that was talking about, he's quite well known, he does a lot of things like that, talking about the injury and basically saying, or alluding to the fact that an injury like that is quite serious and that there's a chance.
Well, hold that thought, Nathan, because we do have a question in our correspondence about that. So let's talk about that in a bit. I think we've waffled on enough now. It's time to bring in our special guest. Cincinnati. And as promised, we have with us, I'm excited about this, actually. It is Jesse James. You can get him at Agent Jesse James, and as the Twitter handle suggests, he is a bona fide agent, and hopefully I'm going to be asking about some of the dark arts, or at least what we as fans perceive as dark arts, and how he and his colleagues are approaching this off season and some of their kind of work that they do. Jesse, first of all, welcome to Cincinnati. Thank you so much for coming on. This is brilliant.
Paul, thanks for having me, man. I am glad to be here, glad to share some insight into the agent world, help out any way I can, answer any questions, and hopefully clear what is the very murky water that free agency can be. So happy to be here. Thank you.
No, absolutely. And you're right, it is a bit murky. As fans, we are emotionally invested in our guys. We want to see T. Higgins stay for a long time. We want DJ Reader to stay forever. But we also know that that's not possible, or at least perhaps it isn't possible. So I think the first time I saw you on Twitter was when T was tagged a couple of weeks ago, and you said a few really, really interesting things, and I just wanted to go over that situation with you. We kind of know now that the Bengals are intent on letting him play out this year, or at least that's what the club says. What's your take on it from an agent's perspective? But before that, actually, could you just remind us what the franchise tag is and how this normally plays out and why it was kind of introduced?
Yeah, of course. The franchise tag is a tool used by NFL clubs. It was something that the CBA brought in years ago. My understanding is that it was brought in by the clubs as kind of that last resort effort to keep at least one. You can only use it one time per year, but keep one guy and deem him as a franchise player, and he'll get paid. Usually, if my math is right, it's the five highest paid players at that position, and then you go back the average of those 5 years as well. So with that number, the cap keeps going up. The franchise tag itself will always keep going up as well. It doesn't have anything to do with the cap per se, but just what the five highest paid players at said position is, again, average over the 5 years. Of course, there's two types of franchise tags. There's the exclusive rights tag, and then there's the non-exclusive that fans should be more familiar with. Exclusive rights, again, my understanding is you tag someone that no other team can come in and negotiate. Non-exclusive is you tag them. Once free agency starts, March 13th of this season, teams can come in and start kind of giving their structure, their pitch to said designated players. For instance, T. Higgins. All of us Bengals fans, yes, I am a Bengals fan, diehard Bengals fan, season ticket owner. Grew up in a very Bengals-oriented family. My dad had tickets since 87, and then he's handed them off to me, wearing kind of the two separate hats, Bengals fan and agent. Not as tough as it seems, but of course I want to see the team do well. I would love to see T get a long-term deal. But alas, we are here with the franchise tag, meaning that he is going to be paid, I believe it's $21.8 million for this year. Franchise tag is guaranteed. What that means is it's guaranteed for skill. It's guaranteed for injury. You can't, if you cut him, you still pay him for the whole duration of the season. It doesn't go into effect until player actually signs the tag. So you hear a lot about, you know, is he going to hold out? A lot of players do hold out on that tag. But you can't do anything.
Why do players hold out then? Why do players hold out? Tell us why.
Traditionally, it's to get that long-term deal or to get kind of a little bit more money. They don't want to go to training camp, risking injury. It's kind of their sole piece of leverage. Coming from an agent perspective, leverage is key in this game. Sure, it'd be easy if we could just go in there and say, hey, T wants, you know, 25 mil a year, AAV, give it to us. You know, they've got a job to do as well. You know, they being the club. The player and the agent's perspective is hold out, see if we can kind of force their hand. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Just depends on the ball club, depends on the situation. In the legal world, you hear a lot of the word, the phrase, it depends. Depends on the player, depends on the club. I can tell you, love the Bengals organization, deal with them often. They can be stubborn in their sense. And I mean that with all due respect and love. for everybody there. But they've got a traditional way that they handle everything. And sorry, my dog is seeing some neighbors walk by, so I apologize for that. So it's all about leverage. It's all about kind of holding the cards in your hand until the very last moment. Very last moment being when the regular season starts, and you start really getting dinged, paychecks and everything. Again, you got to remember the way the CBA is kind of phrased and works out. Players aren't paid per se for training camp. Everyone's basically on that same per diem. Signing bonus is really the only added bonus for a lot of these players that they get. And when you're a player like T. Higgins, if you don't sign the tag, you're not really losing anything until the regular season starts and you get those game checks that start coming in and the penalties associated with that.
It's interesting, isn't it? I just want to stick with the T situation for a while, for a moment, if that's another moment. The Bengals generally didn't really use the tag that often, actually, I don't think, until recently. And they certainly didn't do it within like the first day of the window opening. What do you make of them tagging T so early? Is that significant in any way at all, do you think?
I think so. Again, Bengals are a very traditional run franchise. I haven't gotten clarification on this or not, but my understanding is, look, if T's not tagged, you can't discuss T. Higgins when you go to the combine and you want to talk contracts, you want to talk trades, you want to talk all of these good things where everyone goes. I just got home from the combine. I'm telling you, it's a who's who of the NFL. I ran into Troy Blackburn again while I was there. So you see everybody, you see all these, you know, owners, coaches, and you can really kind of get into to discussions. The after hours discussions are fun. Everyone goes out, everyone goes to the restaurants. They go cigar bars. You know, some people will frequent into, you know, some of the drinking establishments and, you know, loosen up. And that's when conversations really start flowing. Of course, you know, no tampering is going on there, but,
Right.
It's a good time. So, and that's what I thought is, hey, look, it was a Friday. Somebody broke the news that the Bengals intend on using the franchise tag. I know myself, a couple other agents that I follow a lot and talk with Andre Peralta a lot. We all kind of said, hey, look, like, it's not an official tag yet. Just because somebody broke the news, until it's on that transaction wire, it doesn't exist. But I wanted to put my thoughts out there and just say, hey, look, if the Bengals really are putting this out there and they really are putting the tag on T, you know, my antenna went up that I think they are going to go at least have the conversations with the teams in Indy about, hey, what do you value T at? Or if say we were to trade T Higgins, what could we get in return? I don't think they're going to trade him. I'm pretty confident that they're not going to trade him. But they at least wanted to do their due diligence and see what a player like T Higgins caliber would get. You know, and again, you kind of want to have those conversations with teams before the wide receivers work out, before they blow up like they did. I don't know if you followed the combine, but I don't think anybody saw a lot of these workouts happening like they did. This wide receiver class is deep and it's talented. And I know I'm getting a little off the topic, but that's...
No, but it still relates back to T's value, the value of T. This is what we're talking about here, right?
Exactly. So you put the tag on them, you have those conversations when everyone's getting there. You see what the value is. There's nothing that I read in the CBA that says a team cannot talk about a player that is approaching the possibility of a franchise tag. I just think that the Bengals are very, you know, old school in that mentality of, hey, like, let's not bring forth any type of tampering, any type of discussion of malpractice of any sort. So let's tag him on Monday. Let's let the NFL know, hey, this is our franchise player. We know if somebody wants to trade him, or trade for him, we will at least, you know, our starting point is two first round picks. Because I didn't get into it earlier, but if you sign and a player negotiates, franchise player negotiates a new contract, signs with that new team, that team has to in return throw two first round picks to the franchise player's designated team. So that's kind of the starting point is, look, no one's going to trade two first round picks for T, but at least we know what we can get now that he's our franchise designee. And I think they had those conversations. I really do. What came out of it, I'm not sure. I think on Tuesday, some NFL insider said, hey, you know, the talk is that the Bengals could net a first round pick or a high second round pick for T. Higgins. And I don't disagree with that. You know, the Bengals traditionally look at what a player or their original value was. And I discussed the Corey Dillon trade years ago on Twitter about, hey, look, they weren't going to trade Dillon unless they could net almost the exact same return that they invested into Dillon. And it's smart business. If you think about it from the franchise's perspective, is if we're going to deal a player, we want that same return or that same purchasing price that we had for the player. Granted, it was 7 years later, I believe. So T, I think, is viewed similar in that mindset from the Bengals organization is, hey, look, we spent the 33rd pick on him. We don't want to give up or we don't want to lose T unless we're going to get that in return. So, you know, you want to have those conversations before players really start blowing up at the combine. And as we just saw that, you know, other teams are now going to kind of weigh that and say, well, you know, we could invest pick 25 in a wide receiver. And we've got his rights for 4 years plus a fifth year option, much lower than if we trade for T. T's going to command, you know, my value is anywhere from 23 to 27 AAV. And it's a large discrepancy, but I think some clubs are going to value him on that high end based on what we've seen when he's not injured. And other teams, I think, are going to say, well, you know, what, 2,000 yard seasons? He's had some injury concerns. We're not willing to sink that additional $4 million a year into him. We'll give him 23. But again, I think teams are now weighing that with these receivers. You know, Brian Thomas Jr. from LSU is kind of that comparison for T, so to speak, in this class. Which if you spend the 20 through 25 pick on him, you're not even coming close to that AAV that T's getting. So I think they had those conversations. I think they probably were not fruitful. I don't think they were anywhere near what the Bengals wanted in return. And I think that they're 100% ready to go to battle with T. Higgins as wide receiver 1B, as us fans will call him. You know, because he is a number one receiver, and he's proven that over and over again.
We are chatting merrily away to Jesse James, who is an agent, an actual agent, and it's fascinating. Jesse, we hear so much about, you know, agents and David Mulugueta and, you know, who is actually T's agent, and he sends us, he gives us paroxysms. He makes us shiver with fear. any player that has Mulugueta as his agent, we kind of resign to losing at some stage because the Bengals just don't do guaranteed money, apparently. So I wanted to ask you, what are the biggest myths that you can think of about agents that are just plainly untrue?
Well, that is a fair and tough question. I will say this: we're not all, you know, sharks, so to speak, or we're not all money chasing, at least not in it for ourselves. A lot of guys do view this as a business. It is a business. And to be honest, a lot of agents, their main job is agency work. So, you know, yes, our oath that we have taken is to prioritize and maximize whatever is best for our client. And that's what a lot of these agents do. You know, so they do chase the most money that they possibly can. It's not a myth, that is fact. What I will say about that is there are a lot of agents that, like myself, I'm an attorney as well. So I'm licensed in Ohio, I'm licensed in Kentucky. And I have a side business, so to speak. I practice I work for the state of Ohio as well. I'm a prosecuting attorney, and I do that all the as kind of my day job, agency work whenever I'm not doing that. But a lot of agents, this is their sole income. It is what they kind of focus in on and hone in on. And yeah, they're, you know, while yes, we have to maximize our clients' position, a lot of them are in it for themselves. Without giving any names out, there are times where agents get, you know, kind of smacked on the wrist, so to speak. I don't think the fines are enough for us. Weird coming from an agent. But they will talk to scouts, they'll talk to GMs, and they'll say, hey, look, if you draft my guy in these early rounds, you can have access to my beach houses. These are true stories you can look up that have been litigated. I mean, it happens. So there are, you know, two sides of the coin, so to speak, with our agents, with agents. You think back to a movie that inspired me was Jerry Maguire. You've got your Bob Sugars and you've got your Jerry Maguires. You've got your guys who are in it to, you know, money, 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 profit, 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 profit. And then you've got guys like Jerry who say, hey, look, you know, I prioritize a relationship, you know, less clients, better relationships. Again, that's kind of the two sides of the coin. I was blessed to have an opportunity to work with Richard Katz. Richard Katz was an agent for, I believe, 39 years. He just retired. And that was one thing that, like, a common mindset that we shared is, look, we're in it for the players. We're in it for the players' families. We're in it to make sure that we're doing everything that we can for them. Rich taught me a valuable lesson early, and that was, don't quit your day job in this business. Because if you're going to kind of prioritize doing the right thing, you may not be as successful as kind of the money hungry agents or power agents, so to speak. Nothing bad against them. Nothing I think it's kind of, I don't know what the word is, but you know, it's just two ways to do the business. I think at the end, all the clients that I had when I was with KMG Sports were very happy, very satisfied with their deals. You know, of course, we were trying to maximize everything they can, but we would also kind of look into what is the best position for you, for your family. And honestly, we always have that conversation with them is, do you want to go to team A where, you know, it might be less money? But well, let's look at kind of the tax breaks in that state. Let's analyze the housing market. Let's analyze daycare systems for young kids, school systems for kids. We'll look into that kind of deep dive. And other agents do that too. Or do you want to go to team B and, you know, they're willing to throw max money out to you. However, they've been notorious for cutting guys after year one or year two. So the stability may not be there. I think all agents have that conversation, but they kind of, how they steer their client possibly is a little bit different. Nothing wrong with it.
Just different. Kind people of, have different.
Just different. Yeah. And David does, he gets a bad rap around, the Bengals, or not organization, but the Bengals fandom, and I call us our Bengals family.
No, we're just scarred a bit with Jesse Bates, obviously, you know. So,
right, and you know, it's a tough situation because honestly, Jesse's deal was very good, and David really did do a lot of good things for Jesse. He just they want a certain structure. Other teams are willing to meet it. The Bengals weren't. And again, same thing, how agents kind of, you know, word or toss their negotiations to the players or to teams. Teams and organizations are the exact same way. You know, there's where David wants money up front and all these guarantees into multiple years, which is great. I mean, that's what is very good for the player. It's not good for the team. And it creates issues on the back end where you have to do some salary cap gymnastics. You have to kind of make sure that, you know, you look at like the New Orleans Saints, where they're constantly restructuring, they're constantly putting money in. You look at their dead cap, and it's astronomical, where the Bengals have the lowest dead cap, and they're not going to ever get into what's called, you know, a bad place with the salary cap. They do a very, very good job of managing the salary cap. I don't know if it's ESPN, but there's someone out there that puts a like an article out every year about analyzing salary cap health, and the Bengals are always in the top five, if not number one. I mean,
and then from that we could get into a discussion of what is the salary cap. Is actually it's real, but you know, teams sort of really play fast and loose with that a little bit to. And different ways to maximize. But I think that is a separate conversation. What I want to ask you now, just a couple more, if I may, Jesse. This is fascinating stuff, listeners, isn't it? What are agents doing right now after the combine? You mentioned the combine. It sounds like a proper industry powwow up there over there in Indy. What are they doing now? What are they doing in terms of putting their clients in the best possible position right now? What are the available approaches and tools that they've got at their disposal to maximize their clients' value in free agency? Well, those that are entering free agency, I guess.
Are you talking about what are the agents doing to maximize that? What are players doing?
No, what are they? Because we often see these things in. Like a journalist will say, per league sources, you know, kind of John Johnston has just done this and that. And you're thinking, that's an agent, isn't it? That's an agent kind of pushing that narrative there. Is that true or am I being conspiratorial there?
No, agents, we have good working relationships with the media. And yeah, I mean, we're not allowed to talk with clubs until, you know, the 2-day legal tampering window opens. So how are we going to maximize their value? And yeah, media is kind of the way that we can do that. We talk to the media, we'll sit there and say, hey, look, this is kind of what we value our guy at. This may be what we're asking for. And I think a good example of that right now is what Justin Jefferson's doing. You know, it's no rumor that JJ is looking for, you know, 30 million plus. And of course, how did the media get that number? I'm sure someone over at WME kind of slipped that number to them. Or, you know, I think a lot of these media members as well are good at kind of looking at the salary cap, seeing how much it went up, seeing what the values of some of these guys are or trending to, and just kind of finding that slotting system. But yeah, the media they'll reach out to us. They'll ask us, you know, what are you looking for? And kind of, again, it's that leverage thing. It doesn't hurt us. It doesn't hurt our client any bit to kind of put what number we're ultimately going to be asking for out there. It allows then the clubs to kind of sit there, at least clubs who are interested in players, if it's a free agent if it's a free agent that is hitting the market, you know, on March 13th when the league year starts, to kind of have other clubs have that number or at least know what that number is going to be. So they can kind of, once midnight hits, can you know, send us that offer.
With the, you mentioned the increased salary cap. Obviously, Jamar Chase is due for an extension pretty soon. Is it possible to pay two star wide receivers and a quarterback and be a competitive team? Because I think a lot of work. Okay, there you go. Tell me why in a couple of sentences. Go on.
It's been done before. If you look back to the Indianapolis Colts days, they were paying Reggie Wayne, they were paying Marvin Harrison, they were paying Peyton Manning, they were paying Dallas Clark. They had bookend tackles. They had Dwight Freeney. They were paying Bob Sanders. So it's there. It's doable. Now, when you look at it kind of, and you hear Duke talk about it all the time, is the pieces of the pie. It is there, but if you allocate that percentage, so say you're paying 25% of the pie to wide receivers. It's got to come out of somewhere else. And the reason that I think it's doable is if you do that, you just have to make sure that you hit on your draft picks who are on their rookie deals. Our corners aren't paid that much. You know, we're paying rookie corners right now. It'll be interesting to see what they do with a Wuzier. But that's kind of, you're able to pull that money out of what you're not paying corners. You're able to pull that money out of, you know, we're not paying a D end $20+ million, although he absolutely deserves to be paid that. So you can kind of look and say, okay, well, we've got about $4 million that we're not paying Hendrickson, you know, that we can kind of put into this pool or our wide receiver pie, so to speak. We've got $15 million that we're not paying these cornerbacks. You know, corners nowadays, lockdown corners are getting $20 million plus. We didn't pay Jesse Bates what he was asking, so that money can be thrown over here as well. Now, of course, people are going to argue, well, all that money's kind of allocated into Burrow, but it's not. It's not yet, at least. And the way that they structured Burrow's contract, if you look into it, is that it's absolutely doable, but you just have to kind of put a lot of that money into this year coming up. And I'm not so sure that that's exactly how we're back to T. Higgins, how David wants to structure the T. Higgins contract. He wants more guarantees kind of spread out throughout the course of it. So again, it's there. The possibility that we haven't talked about is the double tag situation. And I think that the way that they've structured the contracts of everybody else, it makes that very much into play. Is it ideal? Absolutely not. I can't tell you the last time that any NFL club actually used the double tag and it worked out and the player played on the double tag or stayed with that team. I honestly don't know if it's been successfully pulled off, so to speak. But it is a tool. It's there, and it's a tool that will absolutely favor the Bengals, as they would only have to pay T. Higgins roughly $48 million over 2 years. Gives you T. Higgins and Chase and Burrow for 2024-2025. So I think that is kind of the sweet spot of what they can do with T and how they can pay him.
It's interesting stuff. Jesse James, agent Jesse James, that has spent half an hour with us going through some key issues in this key off season. Jesse, thank you so much for the time, and come back again. You're welcome back anytime, mate. Thank you so much.
Paul, thanks for having me. Thank you.
There we go. Huge thanks to Jesse James at Agent Jesse James. That's Jesse J-E-S-S-E. Yeah, really interesting, wasn't it? And I love the fact that, first of all, he kind of gave us a little insight of what goes on at the combine. Also, some myths about, you know, there are, you know, you kind of hear about, you know, it's not all about show us the money, is it? As he was saying, it's some agents really form very close bonds and friendships with their clients, and it's not, yes, it's about the money, but it's also about a player's happiness, you know. And yeah, very interesting. And the fact that, you know, he does believe that you can pay T and Jamar at the same time, but we'll have to wait and see, I think.
Yeah, I agree you could pay them at the same time, but it's just where you're going to go light in other areas. And
yeah,
I think the narrative around, you know, the Bengals are not necessarily a team that are known for spending right up to the cap and being super creative in terms of how they can get around that. And that cap's only going up, and there's going to be, you know, the Bengals don't have an unlimited pot of Monopoly money, you know, just lying around to throw at whoever they want. So I think the narrative around the league is protect Joe Burrow. They know they need to protect him. They know they need to keep him upright, because that ultimately is going to be the key to this franchise's success over the next decade. Is if Joe Burrow is healthy and he's out there 17 games a season, maybe 18, if, you know, the league gets what they want in extending that. But if he's out there for that, we win a lot of football games. You'd hopefully think we'd win a title or two or three. And it would be a very exciting time. But, you know, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase are not protecting Joe Burrow. And the idea of trying to be a bit sort of frugal in other areas on offense, like the line, concerns me quite a lot when You know, I think it is a little bit easier to go out there and get some sort of decent wide receivers and, you know, let Joe Burrow do the work than it is to go out there and get decent offensive linemen. You only have to look at Jonah Williams. Everyone's saying, look, yep, he's an average tackle, but he's going to get a lot of money because there's not many average starting offensive tackles available. So, for me, as much as I like T and as much as, you know, it'd sell more jerseys if they kept him around long term, I'm just not quite sure that would be the right move.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, Nathan. We will see. It's all gearing up for fun and frolics in free agency. Just a little message about what's happening in the next couple of 3 weeks. We have our International Women's Day podcast coming up. We do it every year. And this year, all being well, we do have a fantastic guest for that. And then we will be back pretty soon after talking about free agency and previews. And then, depending on what happens, we may slip in a cheeky emergency podcast or two. So it's all gonna kick off in the next couple of 3 weeks, I'd say. So yeah, very exciting. So do keep it locked, as they say. Let's get to your correspondence, Jamie at Trek White Beast, and this goes back to what we were talking about before, Jesse's interview. Are you worried about fresh reports regarding the extent of Burrow's injury? Will he be the same QB? Right now, before you have your say. So there, we had a meetup in London a couple of when was it? Last year, obviously autumn. And an American guy was there from Cincinnati. Turns out, believe it or not, he is a hand surgeon, right? He's a surgeon that specializes in hand stuff, right? So I can't remember whether Joe got injured or not. I think it was after that meetup, and he texted me, or maybe we were talking about this. I think we were talking about this at the meetup, actually. And he said that injury is pretty serious and it could end his career. And it was like, what? You know, everything that we've heard of is like, you know, it's just, you know, easily recoverable. But he was saying, no, it's a lot more complicated than that. And this alludes to this report that you were talking about. I've not seen that tweet, but obviously it is more serious than we were led to believe, at least if this guy is to believe and the doctor that you were referencing earlier is to be believed. But all the noises coming out are saying that it's, you know, he'll be back throwing in May and he's lifting at the moment. So, you know, he's on schedule, really. But yeah, I mean, I think it was a lot more serious than was first thought.
Yeah. And for me, regardless of who you believe or who's saying what and whatever, it's terrifying because that is the franchise. You know, there's no, any other player on that team is replaceable, including Jamar Chase, that you can go out there and get another player in that position that would play another level in the future. That's not impossible to get a guy that's on form, top three quarterback in the league. That's generational. That's not going to happen every single time. And when there's chatter around, I mean, Joe Burrow will be back. We're past the stage, I think, where it's going to be always careers over. We're not catastrophizing to that extent. But if he's even, you know, lost 10-20% of his ability there, or he's has to play with a bit of pain, or he had to adapt his game, or he's at risk of further injury in the future, that is a really scary proposition. Because like I said, that your franchise's success for the next decade hinges on that. And he's already had a couple of knocks, Joe Boy. He had a couple of knocks in college. That's always the thing as a Bengals fan that you just hope isn't the Achilles heels for us as a team. Because Jake Browning did a good job when he stepped in last year, and there's other quarterbacks around the league, but we know it's Joe Burrow for us. That's literally this franchise moving forward. And that is the one real big concern is, you know, he's still a young lad, Joe Boy, and, you know, he's going to be doing everything he possibly can to rehab in the best way. He did it from the knee injury, and he came back and was fantastic after that and led us to a Super Bowl. And there would have been everyone out there when he had that knee injury saying, "Cool, you know, is his mobility going to be the same? Mentally, is he going to be okay after that? It's a very big surgery, you know, et cetera, et cetera." And, you know, he's a competitor. He's someone that 100% will give it all to get back there and be at the top. So you've not got any sort of a doubt there. It's just, again, it's a complex injury. It's a serious injury. No one knows the full extent to quite how bad it is, apart from the surgeon and the team doctors and Joe Boy himself. So, again, it's hard just speculating on a generic injury. You don't know what his pain tolerance is, Joe Boy. I can imagine it's probably fairly high. And, you know, obviously these elite athletes, their bodies will naturally probably regenerate a bit quicker than me or you, son, that can't probably do more than an hour in the gym and feel like shit for a week. So, you know, I think that it'd probably be fine. I don't doubt that he'd be thrown in, man. I don't doubt he'd be there week one, etc. You just, it does make you nervous because it's just how significant it is. And as much as you want to be confident, it you know, it's like someone burglaring your house. It's not, hopefully not going to happen. It's probably not going to happen, but you still lock your door and you still want to make sure, you know, you still get a bit nervy. You see some geezer knocking about outside, you know. So I don't know. I just probably a bit oversensitive with it, but you just know how crucial it is, like I said.
Yeah, I think we all are. It's a very good point. John Kelly at JK underscore NI Bengal 68. Picking at 18, we are caught in the middle. We don't need another project player. We need someone to make an immediate impact. We all know the needs at OT and DT, but are we getting a day one starter in those positions at 18? If Bowers or a wide receiver drops, I would definitely be interested. And that's what might happen. You know, it might, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there might be a run on what is a deep tackle, offensive tackle class. You know, they might, you know, go big, and that'll, you know, push down some edge rushers, push down a Brock Bowers potentially, push down a cornerback, whatever, you know. So it is a funny position. I mean, there's also the potential for trading back as well, because a lot of people will tell you that there's only about 12 to 14 players in every draft that have true first round grades, and the rest are kind of, you know, there's a next level after that. So we're in that next level. So would it hurt us to kind of trade back to end of the first? I don't know. Might be worth it. But then again, you know, if suddenly a Bowers drops to you, or a Jared Verse drops to you, or a Newton, or a, you know, Murphy stays pat at around 18, what do you do? You know, it might be worth sticking, really. It is a game, a perennial game of stick or twist, isn't it? But you're right, it is a bit of a funny position, but I also think it opens up the draft to lots of different options, really. It depends who they've got on their board. They will have their board, you know, I would say, you know, if it's not already done, it's on the way to being, you know, done, really. They've got some meetings to get through, and so, you know, there's progress that have been made on their draft board, so they will stick to that draft board, you know. Could be BPA at that point, you know.
The one thing that I think is frustrating with our draft position is, like, where we're picking is, I think, the worst possible position for a team that didn't make the playoffs.
You know,
whatever the tiebreakers, however that works out. And, you know, as it always is in the draft, even if we'd just been sort of, you know, a couple of two, three positions up, you'd be, you know, your draft board changes quite a bit if you were maybe even just like 14th, 15th, you know. There might well be a bit of quality talent, as you were saying, in terms of those top tier players. You might just get a little bit more for your money that bit further up. But they'll be a fantastic player there for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. Neil Gillett at Neil352. Hello, Neil. Some of our busts have come when we didn't actually see the player fully test. And in brackets, a boy Price. We have also been guilty of reading too much into one run. John Ross. There are many good Texas players worth picking in the first 2 days. Xavier Worthy isn't one of them. And I guess Neil's point is, you know, we've been seduced by either traits, upside, when it comes to offensive linemen, actually picking players who aren't particularly athletic, but that means they have a type, really, right? And it's not really been working, to be honest with you. And then perhaps we did get seduced by the speed of John Ross and didn't look into the fact that he you know, there were question marks and red flags over his durability, certainly not his speed and his potential upside. But again, that goes back to what John was saying. You know, Joe Goodberry called this the most important off-season in the team's history, which I think is a bit hyperbolic, to be honest with you. But it is an important off-season, you know, because they've got to get it right. They've got to get it right because Joe Boy's cap hit comes in next year. You know, Jamar Chase needs to be extended, etc., etc. So there is a short window to really make hay, I think, a small window in which to do that. So they've got to get it right, you know, and it's not, now's not the time to be betting on upside. They want some real impact guys if they can get some.
I couldn't agree more, you, my son.
And finally, Rob Hill. Surely this season, I've got a funny feeling that the Bengals are going to strike early again in free agency, but they will also disappoint a lot of fans and use the draft to fill some key spots, such as DT, wide receiver, and cornerback. I think they are going to follow the Chiefs and look to go as cheap as possible on defense. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Chiefs, I was thinking about this today, weirdly. I think, you know, when we sort of said, you know, in the Super Bowl run for us and both the run to the AFC Championship game, it wasn't the much heralded offense that kind of got us there. It was the defense. I think the defense actually won the Chiefs the Super Bowl this year. And if they didn't spend an awful lot of money on defense, then more power, you know, more admiration, sadly, has to go to them and Spagnuolo to the way they managed to, you know, managed to get that defense to carry the team, you know. So, yeah, I mean, if that's the case, if that's the template, then why not? Why not? Why not go a bit cheaper on defense? But what you hope is they can get a Trey Hendrickson deal, a Chido deal, again, you know, not like top rate defensive players, but in the second and third wave of free agency, who are good players coming up for a second contract, you know, showed lots of talent, but are affordable. Do you know what I mean? That's the ideal, isn't it? And that's what they've been good at, to be fair, picking up those guys in the last couple of years.
No, 100%. What win the Bengals the Super Bowl this year is nothing to do, I don't think, with the draft this year. You're very unlikely to see a player come out of the draft this year. And maybe if you draft a tackle or you got Brock Bowers, the tackle might start, and Brock Bowers would almost certainly start if you took him and be fit somewhat impactful. But where it's won and lost this year for the Bengals is a really good free agency class in terms of making sure you either re-sign your own players like DJ Reader or, you know, whoever that might be, but you replace them if needed with some quality starters like they did that two off seasons ago when they brought in people like Trey Hendrickson and Reader and, you know, just some absolute impact players. Chido was the same. Mike Hilton was a fantastic signer. Even Eli Apple did a very good job when he was here for what he was paid. That's the key for really this team this year. You know, the draft this year is going to help the team in 2 or 3 years. The thing that will also help this team no end is last year's draft class coming along a bit. You know, seeing a bit more from the guys we got last year, like Miles Murphy. You know, can he be an impactful player in year two? He's a first round pick. You want to see more from him coming on and sort of making a bit of a move there. We were just talking about DJ Turner earlier in the episode. He's another player, yeah, you know, perhaps did drop off a bit of a cliff at the end of last year, like you said, but, you know, has got the speed, has got the athleticism, maybe another year training camp under there. He's doing a bit of work in the offseason. Can he take a step forward? Because they're the guys you need the value from to really give this team a push. You know, the draft this year, guys that are being drafted in the third, fourth, fifth round this year, you know, they're not likely to have much of an impact on this team. And just the last thing I'll say, talking about those rookies, the one guy I didn't mention that looked a bit of a superstar, I mean, that's perhaps a bit over the top at the end of this episode, but Jordan Battle was great. And he's another, could he, you know, come into that starting role, play really well, you know, who knows, play at a Pro Bowl level, just have a fantastic fantastic season, you know, kind of not expected, bit out of nowhere, but someone to take a real leap forward and get some quality value out of someone that you're not necessarily having to pay the kitchen sink to get them onto the roster in free agency. So that's really what's going to be the difference for this team, you know, for the next year ahead. The draft, whilst important, you're really going to see the fruit from that 2, 3, 4 years down the line.
I think that's a really fair point. I mean, you want an impact player, one or two. And to be fair, we did get some last year. Like you say, Miles Murphy played a lot. He came, you know, he didn't start that well, but he came on a lot towards the end of the season. Jordan Battle became a starter. DJ Turner, a starter, even though he had his ups and downs, he saw starting action, you know. Who else? Right. Andre Yoshivash. It looks fantastic at times. Charlie Jones, punt return for a touchdown, looked interesting, you know. Needs to be on the field more for next year. We don't quite know what we've got in him. Brad Robbins needs to improve like Billy-O next year, really, and in training camp, to be honest. There was some talk about bringing some competition for him, so we'll see about that. So, but a lot of those rookies, you know, did see some action last year. So, like you say, it's all about them taking a step forward, really. Who's to say they won't, really? Also, like, you know, Dax Hill's third year next year. But really, this was his proper rookie season because this is when he played the most. So let's hope he can take a step forward next year. Joseph Asai, good things were spoken about him at the Combine press conferences. So maybe, I mean, he was a really big disappointment last year. So, I mean, who knows? Who knows? But as I say, 'tis the season. Lots of chitter-chatter. Lots of excitement. We're getting some new players very soon. We've got the Joe Mixon situation to sort out as well. Oh, Nanny, what an absolute selection. Treats, Nathan, to discuss in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is. Well, apart from when the games are on, you don't get any better than this. I absolutely love that day of free agency where it all goes absolutely bonkers. About 2 or 3 days and you can't stop refreshing Twitter.
I know, right? I forgot about that. I was like, oh no, I've got to be on Twitter like 24 hours a day now just to see what's going on. And there's always a deal that's done about midnight. There's like 3 in the morning our time that we miss because we're in bed. And so Americans and the Bengals, please, if you wouldn't mind, do your deals during the day so we can actually, you know, see them happen over here in the UK. But, International Women's Day podcast episode next. We'll let you know, obviously, on our socials when that is coming up. And, of course, that is on Twitter, X, at @WhoDay_UK. On Facebook, Bengals UK. And on Instagram, Bengals_UK. So until that time, it is a Who Day from me.
And a Who Day from me. Cheers, guys.
And it should also be noted that the views and opinions expressed within this podcast do not reflect those of the Cincinnati Bengals organization.